This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. On this next to last weekend of the year, it is a very busy time in the movie business. The studios have decided to dump a lot of big-name comedies and dramas on us in these last 2 weeks of 2013. Gray Drake has seen all of them in her job as senior editor at RottenTomatoes.com. You may have seen her on The Reels channel in a show she did with my guest from last weekend, Leonard Maltin. So I'm glad to have Gray joining me. Welcome to America Weekend.
Pleasure to be here. God bless America.
Yeah. There are so many movies out there right now, but there is one movie in particular that has really caught my eye and I think has to go on anybody's top 10 list of the year, and that is the new David O. Russell movie, American Hustle. Do you agree?
Yeah, everybody loves this movie, including me. I'm a huge fan of his, and just last year he had a movie that critics really loved and had a very high tomato meter score in Silver Linings Playbook. So we keep wondering, you know, can he do it again? He's working with actors that he's acted with, that have been in his movies before, and is he going to pull it off? And American Hustle is pretty great. Now, is this one that you've seen?
Yes, I have seen it, and I love con man movies, and particularly con man movies where it actually gets a little bit too convoluted at one point, and they have to dig their way out of the con, which is exactly what happens here, and we're not giving anything away in my saying that.
Right, except this time they're doing it while they're wearing fabulous large-lens sunglasses, and they have amazing costumes and comb-overs and perms, and there's something about the way that this movie looks, it still feels subtle somehow, even though everything about it is pretty much over the top. One of the things that I noticed about this movie, it seems like this year David O. Russell and Martin Scorsese have switched roles as filmmakers. And so all of a sudden Scorsese is making a movie that's a straight-up comedy, and Russell makes American Hustle, which has an amazing soundtrack, and totally seems like the con movie that Scorsese, you know, was similar to something like The Departed.
I agree, and I think it's the best Scorsese movie that Martin Scorsese never made.
I loved this movie, and I loved the soundtrack. It's on constant repeat in my car right now, and I thought, and Jennifer Lawrence, man, would she just stop being so awesome?
Yeah, she's good. Amy Adams is great, and 40% of her breasts look great because they're on the screen the entire time. and Christian Bale and Bradley Cooper, well, Christian Bale, almost unrecognizable in the role.
Yeah, he gained so much weight. I really worry about him with his weight gain and his weight loss, that poor guy. He seems in good health now, thank goodness. But the comb-over that we spend the first few minutes of the movie getting acquainted with is breathtaking.
I agree. You mentioned the Scorsese movie, which is The Wolf of Wall Street, with Leonardo DiCaprio playing a real-life Wall Street hustler. What did you think of this?
Fastest 3 hours of my life.
I thought it came off as long at 3 hours.
In retrospect, I have some suggestions as to what he could trim out. But when I was sitting there in the theater for the first time, I was completely taken by this movie, and I thought it was an unbelievable job by DiCaprio and Jonah Hill. Together, they're fantastic, and this movie, it doesn't really say a whole lot, but there are things in it that I don't think I will ever forget.
I agree that it has great, unforgettable moments in it, but like so many other movies I've seen lately, there's no one in it that I'm rooting for.
Mm-hmm. I guess that doesn't bother me because I am a terrible person. And I didn't mind that I didn't really like anyone because I thought that together, you know, everyone that made this movie created an environment where I didn't love Leonardo DiCaprio's character. I didn't like that he was swindling people, of course, but at the same time, I kind of wanted him to get away with it. I felt conflicted when I was watching it, and I think that's really compelling, and it takes really talented, wonderful filmmakers to bring that kind of feeling to your life.
You know, speaking of Scorsese movies, all of the guys in Goodfellas are bad guys. They're wise guys, but they're all bad guys who you wouldn't root for in real life. And yet in the movie, you do. In this one, I'm not rooting for these guys. And I think part of it may be what Wall Street has done to America in the last half dozen years.
Right. It's just a case of too soon.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I definitely see that. I didn't have any money to begin with, so it's, I'm not personally affected by what they've done, but it is disgusting, and I think that you are not alone in feeling that way. I think our whole nation, as a general rule, is that way, but...
It'll be interesting to see how the movie does at the box office. Here's another movie that's out now that I think you and I are going to disagree on, called Inside Llewyn Davis and the Coen Brothers. What did you think?
I thought this movie was a great example of what the Coen brothers can do when they're telling a small, beautiful story. I thought it was interesting from start to finish. I thought that the cyclical nature of the story, that admittedly doesn't really go anywhere in the traditional sense, was so interesting. And the soundtrack, as usual, from T-Bone Burnett, phenomenal. I couldn't stop watching this movie, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it again.
I was quite disappointed in this. I have kind of a love-hate relationship with the Coen brothers. Things like Miller's Crossing turn me off, but then Fargo turns me on, and it's kind of back and forth with them. But the lead character in this, Llewyn Davis, again, a guy I'm not really rooting for because he's not that nice a guy. And when you talk about the music in this movie, I didn't walk out of there thinking about any of the songs that he had performed and even remembering any of them.
Really? See, that's fascinating because I was humming. There's sort of a jokey, dumb song that everybody knows is going to be a hit. Please, Mr. Kennedy, and I was humming that one. Uh-oh, I don't want to go. I could sing it to you right now. And I think Llewyn, I felt compassion for him. And as an artist, it's so hard to follow the high road when you're starving and when you have nowhere to go in the middle of a cold East Coast winter. I just think the Coen brothers are really fascinating in the way that they can make nothing into something.
All right, let's jump right to another movie, and that is Anchorman 2, which has gotten more promotion for any movie than I can recall because Ron Burgundy, Will Ferrell's character, has appeared, I think, everywhere except on a cereal box.
I don't know. Let's go to the grocery store and check. Because
maybe.
I think no place is safe.
He might have taken
Ron Burgundy.
He could have taken Count Chocula's face, for all I know. But what did you think of the second Anchorman movie?
I was really, really waiting for this one because I love the first one and have loved it ever since I saw it as a midnight movie the night before it officially came out. And this one satisfied me. It was not perfect. I did not go bananas over it. Ultimately, it had me, and then it lost me, and then it had me again, which means that it was too long.
Yeah. It's
too long.
I haven't seen it yet, and I also haven't seen The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the Ben Stiller version of the classic Thurber story, which originally was made into a movie with Danny Kaye. How is his version?
Leonard and I discussed this on our show, The Holiday Movie Preview Review, and we actually felt the same way about it, which surprised me. Shows that the movie is gorgeous. It has a nice message of living your life to the fullest, but ultimately the tone was very weird. It wasn't funny enough to be a comedy, and it wasn't meaningful enough to be a tearjerker. It just sort of was. And although I could visually admire it at every single second, I didn't leave really feeling emotionally attached to it, and that's what that movie was asking me to do, I think. So it's hard for me to recommend it because it's like a bunch of pretty pictures. But honestly, if you just watch the trailer, you kind of get the same feel.
All right, let's finish up with Saving Mr. Banks, which is the Disney studio telling the Disney story behind the scenes of Mary Poppins with Tom Hanks as Walt Disney and Emma Thompson as P.L. Travers, the woman who wrote the Mary Poppins books and was, talk about unlikable characters. She would be at the top of our list today, wouldn't she?
She would, but she makes it look so darn good, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
And, man, Emma Thompson, what a good choice. The casting for this movie was perfect because you've got an unpleasant woman up against the world's probably most loved figure, you know, in Walt Disney. And you've got a story that is, you know, based on the truth, and we're not watching a documentary. So this is the screenwriter's take on what happened that people had to approve and that Disney was okay with letting out there. And that's ultimately what left me cold in the end. I thought that by the end, I could really see how I was being fooled. And I didn't care for that. Now, I think I'm in the minority on this one, because most people walk out of Saving Mr. Banks with two such spectacular stars and a great supporting cast in a beautiful movie that's well done and well written and well shot, well directed, blah, blah, blah. Most people walk out and they're really touched by it, but there's something that rubbed me the wrong way, and I think it's just that I know that's not how this happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, the movies that we've been talking about are all fresh on the tomato meter. Critics are loving them. It's actually been ultimately a really, really strong season.
I'll tell you just one other thing I have to say about Saving Mr. Banks. It's two movies in one, and I kind of enjoyed the modern version of, you know, Disney and Travers fighting and the creative people, including Bradley Whitford and Jason Schwartzman as one of the Sherman brothers, the guys who wrote all those songs for Mary Poppins. That part of it was entertaining to me, although it was Disney-fied, and I'm not a Disney fan. But what I really didn't like was the other half of the movie, which is the story of her growing up as a child in Australia with an alcoholic father. I didn't care about that. If that was supposed to make me care about her, it failed.
How interesting. Look at you not caring for the sentimental part of the movie. I actually thought that was quite a fascinating backstory as to why that she cared about the book at all. Because I understand on paper that as a writer, you care about what you write. You can't finish a whole novel that's beloved by millions and not care about it at all. But why is the question? And the fact that they had a really good why in this movie actually was one of the things that pulled me into it. And I thought that Colin Farrell was wonderful as P.L. Travers' father. Those parts I was down with, and I guess it really came down to that very last part, and there's one final kind of big emotional scene, and that's when I went, oh, wait a minute, I snapped out of the dream, and I realized that Disney had gotten me again, darn it, and I was so mad.
I know the scene you're referring to, and you are 100% right, Gray. Gray Drake is the senior editor at RottenTomatoes.com. You can always check that website to see what people are saying about movies and what she and the other critics there are saying about them. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Pleasure to be with you. Happy holidays.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.